This is Audible.
Audible Frontiers presents The Human Division, written by John Scalzi, narrated by William Dufries. Episode 3. We Only Need the Heads. Hart Schmidt went to Ambassador Obomwe's temporary office on Phoenix Station when she pinged him, but she wasn't there. Schmidt knew that the ambassador not being in her office wasn't a good enough excuse for him not to be in her presence when commanded, so he did a hasty PDA search on his boss. 3 minutes later, he walked up to her in an observation lounge. "Ambassador," he said. "Mr. Schmidt," the ambassador said, not turning to him. Schmidt followed her gaze out the wall-sized window of the observation deck to the heavily damaged ship, hovering at a slight distance from the station itself. "The Clark," Schmidt said. "Very good, Schmidt," Obomwe said, in a tone that informed him that, as with so many of the things he said to her in his role as a functionary on her diplomatic team, he was not telling her anything she didn't already know. Schmidt made an involuntary, nervous throat clearing in response. "I saw Navid Bala earlier today," Schmidt said, naming the Clark's executive officer. "She tells me that it's not looking good for the Clark. The damage it took on our last mission is pretty extensive. Fixing it will be nearly as expensive as building a new ship. She thinks it's likely they'll simply scrap it."
"And do what with the crew?" Obomwe said.
"She didn't say," Schmidt said. "She said the crew is being kept together, at least for the moment. There's a chance the Colonial Union may just take a new ship and assign the Clark's crew to it. They might even name it the Clark if they're going to scrap this one." Schmidt motioned in the direction of the ship. Obomwe said, and then lapsed back into silence, staring at the Clark. Schmidt spent a few more uncomfortable minutes before clearing his throat again.
"You pinged me, Ambassador?" Schmidt said, reminding her he was there.
"You say the Clark crew hasn't been reassigned," Obomwe said, as if their earlier conversation hadn't had an extended pause in it.
"Not yet," Schmidt said.
"And yet my team has," Obomwe said, finally looking over at Schmidt. "Most of it, anyway. The Department of State assures me that the reassignments are only temporary. They need my people to fill in holes on other missions, but in the meantime, I'm left with two people on my team. They left me Hillary Drollet, and they left me you. I know why they left me Hillary. She's my assistant. I don't know why they chose to take every other member of my team, assign them some presumably important task, and leave you doing nothing at all."
"I don't have any good answer to that, ma'am," was the only thing that Schmidt could say that wouldn't have immediately put his entire diplomatic career in jeopardy.
Obomwe said again, and turned back to the Clark. Schmidt assumed this was his cue to depart, and began stepping back out of the observation deck, perchance to avail himself of a stiff drink at the nearest commissary when Obomwe spoke again.
"Do you have your PDA with you?" she asked him.
"Yes, ma'am," Schmidt said.
"Check it now," Obomwe said.
"We have new orders."
Schmidt drew out the PDA from his jacket pocket, swiped it on, and read the new orders flashing in his mail queue.
"We're being attached to the Bula negotiations," he said, reading the orders.
"Apparently so," Obomwe said. "Deputy Ambassador Zala ruptured her appendix and has to withdraw. Normally, protocol would have her assistant step up and continue negotiations, but Zala's plank of the negotiations hasn't formally started, and for protocol reasons, it's important for the Colonial Union to have someone of sufficient rank head this portion of the process. So here we are."
"What part of the negotiations are we taking over?" Schmidt asked.
"There's a reason I'm having you read the orders, Schmidt," Obomwe said. Her tone had returned. She turned to face him again.
"Sorry, ma'am,"
Schmidt said hastily, and gestured at his PDA.
"I'm not there yet."
Obomwe grimaced, but kept whatever comment about Schmidt that was running through her head to herself. "Trade and tourism access to Bula Worlds,"
she said instead. How many ships, how large the ships, how many humans on the ground, Ambulati, and its colony worlds at one time, and so on.
We've done that before, Schmidt said. Well, that shouldn't be a problem.
There's a wrinkle that's not in your orders, Obumwe said. Schmidt looked up from his PDA. There's a Bula colony world named Wantji. It was one of the last ones the Bula claimed before the Conclave told the unaffiliated races they could no longer colonize. They haven't put any of their people on it yet because they don't know how the Conclave would react to that.
What about it? Schmidt asked.
3 days ago, the CDF received a skip drone from Wantji with an emergency distress message in it, Obumwe said. Why would the Bula, on an officially uninhabited planet, send the Colonial Defense Forces a distress message? Schmidt almost asked, but didn't. He realized it was exactly the sort of question that would make the ambassador think he was even more stupid than she already believed he was. Instead, he attempted to figure out the question on his own. After a few seconds, it came to him.
A wildcat colony, he said.
Yes, Obumwe said. A wildcat colony that the Bula don't appear to know anything about at the moment.
We're not telling them it's there? Schmidt asked.
Not yet, Obumwe said. The CDF is sending a ship first.
We're sending a warship into Bula territory to check on a human colony that's not supposed to be there?
Schmidt said, slightly incredulously.
Ambassador, this is a very bad idea.
Of course it's a bad idea, Obumwe snapped. Stop informing me of obvious things, Schmidt.
Sorry, Schmidt said.
Our job in the negotiations is twofold, Obumwe said. We negotiate the trade and tourism rights. We also negotiate them slowly enough that the Turbigan is able to get to Wanchi and pluck that wildcat colony, or what's left of it, from the planet.
Without telling the Bula, Schmidt said.
He kept the skepticism from his voice as polite as possible. The thinking is that if the Bula aren't aware of it now, there is no point in making them aware, Obumwe said. And if they become aware, then the wildcatters will have been removed before they present a genuine diplomatic issue.
As long as they overlook a CDF ship having done time over their planet, Schmidt said.
The thinking is that the Turbigan will be long gone before the Bula know they're there, Obumwe said. Schmidt refrained from saying it's still a bad idea and chose something else instead.
You said it's the Turbigan that's heading to this colony planet?
He said.
Yes,
Obumwe said. What about it? Schmidt accessed his PDA and searched through his message queue.
Harry Wilson was attached to the Turbigan a few days ago, he said, and turned his PDA to the ambassador to show her the message Wilson had sent him. Its CDF platoon lost their systems guy on Brindle. Harry was stepping in for their current mission, which would be this one, wouldn't it?
Yet another team member of mine farmed out, Obumwe said. What is your point?
My point is that it could be useful for us to have someone on the ground on this, Schmidt said. You know we're getting dealt a bad deal here, ma'am. At the very least, Harry can tell us how bad of a hand it actually is.
Asking your CDF friend for information on an active military mission is a fine way to get yourself shot, Schmidt, Obumwe said.
I suppose it would be, Schmidt said.
Obumwe was silent at this for a moment. I don't think you should risk being caught doing something like that, she said, eventually.
I understand you entirely, ma'am, Schmidt said.
He turned to go.
Schmidt?
Obumwe said.
Yes, ma'am,
Schmidt said. You understand that earlier I was implying that they left you with me because you were largely useless? Obumwe said.
I got that, yes, Schmidt said,
after a second.
I'm sure you did,
Obumwe said. Now, prove me wrong. She returned her gaze to the clerk.
Oh, boy, Harry. Schmidt thought as he walked away. I hope you're having an easier time of things than I am right now. The shuttle from the Tübingen hit the atmosphere of the planet like a rock punching into an earthen dam, throwing off heat and rattling the platoon of Colonial Defense Forces soldiers inside like they were plastic balls in a child's popper. "This is nice," Lieutenant Harry Wilson said, to no one in particular, then directed his attention to his fellow Lieutenant Heather Lee, the platoon commander. "It's funny how something like air can feel so bumpy." Lee shrugged.
"We have restraints," she said.
"And this isn't a social call."
"I know," Wilson said.
The shuttle rattled again.
"Yeah, but this has always been my least favorite part of a mission. Aside from, you know, the shooting and killing and being shot at and possibly eaten by aliens."
Lee did not look impressed with Wilson.
"Been a while since you've dropped, Lieutenant?"
Wilson nodded.
"Did my combat time and then transferred into research and technical advising for the diplomatic corps. Don't have to do too many drops for that. And the ones I do come down nice and easy."
"Consider this a refresher course," Lee said.
The shuttle rattled again. Something creaked worryingly.
"Space," Wilson said, and sank back into his restraints. "It's fantastic."
"It is fantastic, sir," said the soldier next to Lee. Wilson automatically had his brain pal query the man's identity. Instantly, text floated over the soldier's head to let Wilson know he was speaking to Private Albert Jefferson. Wilson glanced over to Lee, the platoon leader, who caught the glance and gave another almost infinitesimal of shrugs, as if to say, "He's new."
"That was attempting sarcasm, Private," Wilson said.
"I know that, sir," Jefferson said. "But I'm being serious. Space is fantastic. All of this, it is awesome."
"Well, except for the cold and vacuum and the unbearable silent death of it," Wilson said.
"Death?"
Jefferson said and smiled. "Begging the lieutenant's pardon, but death was back home on Earth. Do you know what I was doing 3 months ago, sir?"
"I'm guessing being old," Wilson said.
"I was hooked up to a dialysis machine praying I would make it to my 75th birthday," Jefferson said. "I'd already gotten one transplant, and they didn't want to give me another because they knew I was going to leave anyway. Cheaper to hook me up. I barely made it. But I got to 75, signed up, and a week later, boom, new body, new life, new career. Space is awesome."
The shuttle hit an air pocket of some sort, tumbling the transport before the pilot could right the ship again.
"There's the minor problem that you might have to kill things," Wilson said to Jefferson. "Or get killed or fall out of the sky. You're a soldier now. These are the occupational hazards."
"Fair trade," Jefferson said.
"Is it?"
Wilson said.
"First mission?"
"Yes, sir," Jefferson said.
"I'll be interested to know if your answer to that is the same a year from now," Wilson said.
Jefferson grinned.
"You strike me as a glass half empty kind of guy, sir," he said.
"I'm the glass is half empty and filled with poison kind of guy, actually," Wilson said.
"Yes, sir,"
Jefferson said. Lee nodded suddenly, not at Wilson or Jefferson, but at the message she was getting from her brain pal.
"Drop off in two," she said. "Fire teams."
The soldiers formed up into groups of four.
"Wilson, you're with me."
Wilson nodded.
"You know, I was one of the last people off, sir," Jefferson said to Wilson, a minute later as the shuttle zeroed in on its landing site.
"Off of what?" Wilson said. He was distracted. He was going over the mission specs on his brain pal.
"Off of Earth," Jefferson said.
"The day I went up the Nairobi beanstalk, that guy brought that alien fleet into Earth orbit. Scared the hell out of all of us. We thought we were under attack. Then the fleet started transmitting all sorts of things about the Colonial Union."
"You mean like the fact that it had been socially engineering the Earth for centuries to keep it a farm for colonists and soldiers?" Wilson said.
Jefferson snorted quietly.
"That's a little paranoid, don't you think, sir? I think this fellow, John Perry," Wilson said, "has some explaining to do about how he managed to head up an alien fleet in the first place. Anyway, my transport ship was one of the last out of Earth dock. There were one or two more, but after that I'm told the Earth stopped sending us soldiers and colonists. They want to renegotiate their relationship to the Colonial Union, is how I've heard it. Doesn't seem unreasonable, all things considered, said Wilson. The shuttle landed with a muted thump and settled into the earth.
All I know, sir, is I'm glad this Perry guy waited until I was gone, Jefferson said. Otherwise, I'd still be old and missing my kidneys and probably near death. Whatever's out here is better than what I had there.
The shuttle door cracked open and the outside air rushed in, hot and sticky and rich with the scent of death and decomposition. From the platoon came a few audible groans and the sound of at least one person gagging. Then the platoon began its disembarkment by fire teams. Wilson looked over at Jefferson, whose face had registered the full effect of the smell coming off the planet.
I hope you're right, Wilson said. But from the smell of it, we're probably near death here, too.
They stepped out of the shuttle and onto a new world. The Bula sub-ambassador looked not unlike a lemur, as all Bula did, and carried the jeweled amulet that signified her station in the diplomatic corps. She had an unpronounceable name, which, all things considered, was not unusual, but insisted that Obumwe and her staff call her Sub-Ambassador Ting.
It is close enough for government work, she said, through a translator device on her lanyard, as she shook Obumwe's hand.
Then welcome, Sub-Ambassador Ting, Obumwe said.
Thank you, Ambassador Obumwe,
Ting said, and motioned for her, Drolet and Schmidt, to sit across from her and her two staff at the conference room table.
We are delighted that someone such as yourself was available for these negotiations on such short notice. It is a shame about Katarina Zala. Please send her my regards.
I shall,
Obumwe said. She sat.
What is this appendix she ruptured?
Ting asked, sitting herself.
It's a vestigial organ attached to the larger digestive system,
Obumwe said.
Sometimes it gets inflamed. A rupture can cause sepsis and death if not treated.
It sounds horrible,
Ting said.
It was caught early enough that Deputy Ambassador Zala was in no real danger,
Obumwe said. She will be fine in a few days.
That's good to hear,
Ting said.
Interesting how such a small part can threaten the health of an entire system.
I suppose it is,
Obumwe said. Ting sat there for a moment, companionably silent, and then with a start grabbed the PDA her assistant had laid before her.
Well, let us begin, shall we? We don't want our diplomatic system grinding to a halt because of us.
The hand-tooled sign at the edge of the colony read New Seattle. As far as Wilson could see, it was the only thing in the colony that hadn't burned.
Teams, report in, Lee said.
There were no teams other than her own near her. Her voice was being carried by Brain Pal. Wilson opened up the general channel in his own head.
Team one here, said Blaine Gibbons, the team leader. I've got nothing but burned huts and dead bodies.
Team two here, said Muhammad Ahmed. I've got the same.
Team three, said Janet Mulray. More the same. Whatever happened here isn't happening now.
The three other teams reported the same.
Anybody finding survivors?
Lee asked. Responses came in. None so far.
Keep looking, she said.
I need to get to the colony HQ, Wilson said. That's why I'm here. Lee nodded and moved her team forward.
I thought we weren't colonizing anymore, Jefferson said to Wilson as they moved into the colony. The aliens told us they'd vaporize any planet we colonized.
Not the aliens, Wilson said. The conclave. There's a difference.
What's the difference? Jefferson asked.
There are about 600 different alien races we deal with, Wilson said. Maybe two-thirds of them are in the conclave. The rest of them are like us, unaffiliated. He routed around a dead colonist who lay charred in the path.
And what does that mean, sir?
Jefferson asked, routing around the same body but letting his eyes linger on it.
It means they're like us, Wilson said. If they colonize, the conclave will blast the crap out of them, too.
But this is a colony, Jefferson said, turning his eyes back to Wilson.
Our colony.
It's a wildcat colony, Wilson said.
It's not sanctioned by the Colonial Union, and this is someone else's planet anyway.
The Conclave's?
Jefferson asked. Wilson shook his head. No, the Bula. Another group of aliens entirely. He motioned at the burned-out huts and sheds around them. When those guys headed here, they were on their own. No support from the CU, and no defense either. So not our colony, Jefferson said. No, Wilson said. Will the aliens see it that way, sir? Jefferson asked. Either group, I mean. Since we'd be screwed either way if they didn't, let's hope so, Wilson said. He looked up and saw he and Jefferson had gotten off the pace of Lee. Come on, Jefferson. He jogged to catch up with the platoon leader. 2 minutes later, Wilson and Lee's squads were in front of a partially collapsed Quonset hut. I think this is it, Lee said to Wilson. The HQ, I mean. How do you figure? Wilson said. Largest building inside the colony proper, Lee said. Have to have some place for town meetings. I can't argue with that logic, Wilson said, and looked at the hut, concerned at its stability. He looked over at Lee and her squad. After you, Lieutenant, Lee said. Wilson sighed and pried open the door to the hut. Inside the hut were two bodies and a whole lot of mess. Looks like something's been at them, Lee said, tapping one with a foot. Wilson saw Jefferson, looking at the body, turn a sicklier shade of green than he already was. How long have they been dead, do you think? Wilson asked. Lee shrugged. Between the time they sent the distress call and we got here, couldn't be less than a week. Since when do wildcat colonies report back? Wilson asked. I just go where they tell me, Lieutenant, Lee said. She motioned to Jefferson and pointed at one of the bodies. Check that body for an ID chip. Colonists sometimes put them in so they can keep track of each other.
You want me to go through the body?
Jefferson asked, clearly horrified. Ping it, Lee said impatiently. Use your brain, pal. If there's a chip, it'll respond. Wilson turned away from Lee and Jefferson's truly compelling discussion and headed further into the hut. The bodies had been in an open area that he suspected, true to Lee's hunch, was used for colony gatherings. Further in were a set of what used to be cubicles and a small enclosed room. The cubicles were a shattered mess. The room, from the outside at least, looked intact. Wilson was hoping the colony's computing and communication hardware were in there. The room door was locked. Wilson jiggled the door handle a couple of times to be sure, then looked at the other side of the door. He pulled out his multipurpose tool, formed it into a crowbar, and pulled the pins out of the door hinges. He set the door aside and looked into the room. Every piece of equipment had been hammered into oblivion. Crap, Wilson said to himself. He went into the room anyway to see if anything was salvageable. Find anything? Lee asked a few minutes later, appearing by the door. If someone likes puzzles, they could have fun with this, Wilson said. He stood up and gestured to the remains of the equipment. So nothing you can use, Lee said. No, Wilson said. He bent down and grabbed a piece of debris and held it out for Lee to take. That's supposed to be the memory core. It's been hammered out of usability. I'll take it back and try to get something out of it anyway, but I wouldn't be holding out hope. Maybe some of the colonists' computers and handhelds will have something, Lee said. I'll have my people collect them. That would be nice, Wilson said. Although if everything tied through this central server, it's possible everything got wiped before this got broken up. It wasn't just destroyed in the fighting, Lee said. Wilson shook his head and motioned to the wreckage. Locked room. No other damage to this part of the hut. And it looked to me like the damage here was methodical. Whoever did it didn't want what was stored on it to get captured. But you said the door was locked, Lee said. Whoever ran over this place didn't stop to check the computer. Yeah, Wilson said, and then looked over at Lee. What about you? Get anything off the bodies? Yeah, once Jefferson figured out what he was doing, Lee said. Martina and Vasily Ivanovich. In the absence of any other evidence to the contrary, I've nominated them as the two who ran the computers here.
I'm having the teams check the other bodies for ID chips, too.
Anything else but their names? Wilson asked.
The usual biometric data, Lee said. I pinged the tub to see if there was anything in its databases, but there wasn't anything. I wasn't expecting there to be, unless they happen to be ex-CDF.
Just two more idiots on a spectacularly ill-advised colonization attempt, Wilson said.
With about 150 other idiots, Lee said.
And thus the Colonial Union is infinitesimally smarter, Wilson said.
Lee snorted.
In the distance came the sound of someone retching. Lee craned back to look.
Oh, look, it's Jefferson, she said. He's popped.
Wilson got up to look. That took a little bit longer than I expected, he said.
He's been driving us all a little crazy with the gung-ho thing, Lee said.
He's new, Wilson said.
Hopefully it wears off, Lee said, before the rest of us kill him.
Wilson smiled at this and then threaded back through the mess to Jefferson.
Sorry, sir, he said.
He was kneeling by the body of the late Vasily Ivanovich, a puddle of sick off to his side. His other two fire team members had found some other place to be.
You're hanging out near two partially decomposed, partially eaten bodies, Wilson said. Being sick is a perfectly rational response.
If you say so.
Jefferson said. I do say so, Wilson said. My first mission? I almost wet myself. Throwing up is fine.
Thank you, sir,
Jefferson said.
Wilson patted Jefferson on the back and glanced over at Vasily Ivanovich. The man was a mess, bloated and with a significant amount of his abdomen chewed away by scavengers. From his vantage point, Wilson could see into the gnawed-on remains of Ivanovich's digestive system, inside of which something glinted. Wilson frowned.
What is that? He said.
What is what, sir?
Jefferson asked. Wilson ignored him and looked closer, and then after a minute, thrust his glove into what remained of Ivanovich's stomach. Jefferson gagged, but didn't have anything else to throw up, so instead he stared openly at the small, glittery thing in Wilson's gore-coated hand. Wilson delicately picked out the thing with his other hand and held it up in the light.
What is that? Jefferson asked.
It's a data card, Wilson said.
What was it doing in his stomach? Jefferson asked.
I have no idea,
Wilson said, and then turned his head.
Lee!
He shouted.
What?
Lee shouted back from the other side of the hut.
Have your people look for a functioning PDA and bring it to me immediately, he said. One that takes data cards.
Shortly thereafter, Wilson had jammed the data card into a handheld and connected his brain pal to the computer.
Why would he swallow a data card? Lee asked as she watched Wilson.
He wanted to keep the data out of enemy hands, Wilson said.
He was simultaneously going through the file hierarchy on the data card.
That's why he destroyed the computer and communications equipment, Lee said.
I'd have more answers for you if you let me actually concentrate on what I'm doing, Wilson said.
Lee shut up, slightly annoyed. Wilson ignored this, closed his eyes, and focused on his data. Several minutes later, Wilson opened his eyes and looked at Ivanovich with something that approached wonder.
Lee noticed.
What? She said.
What is it?
Wilson looked up at Lee blankly, and then back to Ivanovich, and then at the body of Martina Ivanovich.
Wilson, Lee said.
I think we better take back these bodies, Wilson said.
Why?
Lee asked, looking at the corpses.
I'm not sure I can tell you, Wilson said. I don't think you have the clearance.
Lee looked back at Wilson, annoyed.
It's not about you, Wilson assured her. I'm pretty confident I don't have the clearance either.
Lee, not precisely satisfied, looked back at the Ivanoviches.
So you want us to haul these up to the tub?
You don't have to bring all of them, Wilson said.
Come again? Lee said.
You don't have to bring their entire bodies, Wilson said. Their heads will do just fine.
You feel it too, don't you?
Obumoy said to Schmidt during a break in negotiations. The two were in the conference room hallway, drinking the tea Schmidt had gotten them.
Feel what, ma'am?
Schmidt said.
Obumoy sighed. Schmidt, if you don't want me to keep believing that you are entirely useless to me, then you have to actually be useful to me, she said.
Schmidt nodded.
All right, he said.
There's something not right about Sub-Ambassador Ting.
That's right, Obumoy said. Now tell me what that something not right is.
I don't know,
Schmidt said. He saw Obumoy get a look on her face and held up his hand peremptorily. This surprised Obumoy into silence.
Sorry, Schmidt said hastily. I say I don't know because I'm not sure what the cause of it is, but I know what the result is. She's being too easy on us in the negotiations. We're getting too many of the things we want from her. We're getting something close to a rubber stamp.
Yes, Obumoy said. I'd like to know why.
Maybe she's just a bad negotiator, Schmidt said.
The bullet pulled out these parts of the negotiations specifically for more detailed attention, Obumoy said. This suggests they are not trivial to the Bula. The Bula also aren't known for being pushovers in negotiations. I don't think they'd put a poor negotiator in charge of this part of the process.
Do we know anything about Ting? Schmidt asked.
Nothing Hillary could find, Obumoy said. The Colonial Union files on diplomatic missions focus on the primary diplomats, not the secondary ones. I have her looking for more, but I don't expect to find too much. In the meantime, what are your suggestions?
Schmidt took an almost infinitesimally small moment to internally register surprise that Obumoy was indeed asking his options from him, and then said, Keep doing what we're doing. We are getting what we want from her. The thing we have to worry about at this point is getting them too soon and getting them done before the Turbigen finishes her mission.
I can come up with some reason to suspend negotiations until tomorrow, Obumoy said. I can ask for more time to research some particular point. That won't be difficult to do.
All right, Schmidt said.
On the subject of the Turbigen, any news from your friend? Obumoy asked.
I sent him an encrypted note on the next skip drone to the ship, Schmidt said.
You shouldn't trust our encryption, Obumoy said.
I don't,
Schmidt assured her.
But I think it would have been suspicious for me to send him an unencrypted note, considering the mission. The note itself is innocuous blather, which contains a line that says, It was like that time on Phoenix Station.
What does that mean? Obumoy said.
Basically, it means, tell me if something interesting is going on, Schmidt said. He'll understand it.
Do you want to explain to me how it is the two of you have your own little secret code? Obumoy said. Did you make it up together when you were six?
Schmidt said, uncomfortable. It just sort of came about.
Really? Obumoy said.
Harry would see you pissed at me during some negotiation or another and came up with it as a way to let me know he was interested in knowing the details later,
Schmidt said quickly. He looked away as he said it. Are you actually that scared of me, Schmidt? Obumoy said, after a second.
I wouldn't say scared, Schmidt said. I would say I have a healthy respect for your working methods.
Yes, well, Obumoy said. For the moment, at least, your terrified obsequiousness is not going to be useful to me, so stop it.
I'll try, Schmidt said.
And let me know if you hear from your friend, Obumoy said. I don't know what Sub-Ambassador Ting is up to either. It's making me uncomfortable, but I have a worry that somehow that wildcat colony on Wanchi is involved. If it is, I want to know how before anyone else.
You want me to do what?
Asked Dr. Tomek. They had taken the entire bodies of the Ivanoviches, after all, and both of them were now spread out on examination tables. Dr. Tomek was too much of a professional to register displeasure at the sight and smell of the decayed bodies, but she was not notably pleased with Lieutenant Wilson for bringing them into her medical bay unannounced.
Scan their brains, Wilson said. I'm looking for something.
What are you looking for?
Tomek asked.
I'll tell you if I find it, Wilson said.
Sorry, I don't work that way, Tomek said.
She glanced over to Lieutenant Lee, who had remained after her soldiers had hauled the Ivanoviches into the medical bay.
Who is this guy?
she asked, pointing at Wilson. "He's temporarily replacing Mitchison," Lee said. "We're borrowing him from a diplomatic mission. And there's something else about him."
"What?"
Tomek asked. Lee motioned with her head to Wilson, who took that as his cue.
"I've got top-level security clearance that allows me to order anyone on the ship to do what I want them to do," Wilson said to Tomek. "It's left over from my last mission. They didn't get around to revoking it from me."
"I've already complained to Captain Augustine about it," Lee said. "He agrees it's a crock of shit, but also that there's nothing we can do about it right now. He'll send a complaint with the next skip drone. Until then, you've got to do what he tells you."
"It's still my medical bay," Tomek said.
"Which is why I'm asking you to do the scan," Wilson said, and nodded at the body scanner, tucked into a cubbyhole in the back of the medical bay. "I've serviced those and have trained on them. I could do the scan myself, but you'd do it better. I'm not trying to shut you out, Doctor. But if what I'm looking for isn't actually there, then it's best for everyone if my paranoid delusions are kept to myself."
"And if it is there?" Tomek asked.
"Then things begin to get really complicated," Wilson said. "So let's hope we don't find it."
Tomek glanced back over to Lee, who shrugged. Wilson caught the substance of the shrug. "Humor this idiot," it said. "We'll be rid of him soon enough."
Well, that worked for him.
Tomek walked over to the cubbyhole and retrieved the scanner and the reflection plate, and then came back to the examining table that held Vasily Ivanovich. She donned gloves, gently lifted Ivanovich's head, and set the plate behind it.
"Where's the visual going?" Wilson asked.
Tomek motioned with her head to the display above the examination table. Wilson turned it on.
"Ready when you are," he said.
Tomek positioned the scanner, activated it, and after a couple of seconds, looked up at the display.
"What the hell?"
she asked after a moment.
"Lovely," Wilson said, looking at the display. "And by lovely, I mean, oh crap."
"What is it?"
Lee asked, coming over to get a better look at the thing Wilson and Tomek were looking at.
"I'll give you a hint," Wilson said. "We've all got one in our head."
"That's a brain pal?"
Lee asked, pointing at the screen.
"Got it in one," Wilson said, and leaned in toward the display. "Looks like a little different design than the version I worked on when I was in CDF research and development, but it can't be anything else."
"This guy is a civilian," Tomek said. "What the hell is he doing with a brain pal?"
"Two possible explanations," Wilson said. "One, it's not a brain pal, and we're looking at a really coincidentally arranged tumor. Two, our friend Vasily Ivanovich isn't really a civilian. One of these is more likely than the other."
Tomek glanced over at Martina Ivanovich.
"What about her?"
she asked.
"I suspect they're a matching set," Wilson said. "Shall we find out?"
They were indeed a matching set.
"You know what this means,"
Tomek said after she shut off the scanner. Wilson nodded.
"I told you this would get complicated."
Lee looked over at the two of them.
"I'm not following."
"We've got brain pals in the heads of two apparent civilians," Wilson said, "which means they're probably not civilians, which suggests this wildcat colony might not be the freelance colonization effort that it's been advertised as being. And now we know why all the computers and records were destroyed by the colonists."
"Except for the data chip you found in this guy,"
Lee said, pointing to Vasily Ivanovich.
"I don't think he swallowed it to save it," Wilson said. "I think he swallowed it because they were being overrun and he didn't have time to destroy it any other way."
"What was on the chip?" Tomek said.
"A bunch of daily status reports," Wilson said.
Lee frowned at this, clearly not seeing how that would matter.
"It's not what data were on the chip that was important," Wilson continued. "It was the fact that data were saved in a memory structure that's proprietary to brain pals. The fact it exists implies someone was using a brain pal. The fact that brain pal exists implies this is more than just a wildcat colony."
"We need to tell Captain Augustine about this," Lee said.
"He's the captain," Tomek said.
He probably already knows.
If he already knew, he probably wouldn't have let me order you to examine these two, Wilson said, no matter what my security level.
No, I think this is going to be as much of a surprise to him as it is to us.
So we tell him, Lee said. We tell him, right?
Yes, Wilson said. He'll send a skip drone detailing what we've found, and I expect that immediately thereafter we'll get new orders, telling us that it's no longer just an extraction job.
What will it be now? Lee asked. A cover-up, Tomek said, and Wilson nodded. Destroy any evidence this was anything but a wildcat colony. We're supposed to be destroying all the evidence anyway, Lee said.
Not just down there, Wilson said.
He pointed to the Ivanoviches.
I mean turning these two and their brain pals into a fine powder, not to mention obliterating any information on what we just found out and that data card we found. And if these two were really still active in the CDF, I suspect they'll be posthumously demoted for not blowing their own heads off with a shotgun.
Lee went to speak with Captain Augustine. Tomek stored the bodies. Wilson wandered toward the officer's mess to get a cup of coffee. As he did so, he pinged his brain pal's message queue and found there was a message there from Hart Schmidt. Wilson smiled and prepared for a delightful dose of Schmidt's special brand of wan neuroticism. He stopped smiling when Hart noted he'd been assigned to be Ambassador Obumwe's right-hand man for the Bula negotiations, and that Sub-Ambassador Ting's personality was like that one time on Phoenix Station he and Wilson had met up with that other Bula.
Shit, Wilson said. There's no way that Hart put that phrasing in that sentence coincidentally.
Wilson thought about it for several minutes before muttering, fuck it, composing a note and encrypting it. Then with his brain pal, he took an image of his coffee, created a steganographic picture with it and the encoded note, addressed it to Hart and sent it off with the data queue for transmission on the next skip drone, which, given the bombshell Lee was dropping into Captain Augustine's lap at the moment, would probably be out almost instantly. Wilson wasn't under the impression that his sleight-of-hand encoding of the message into the image of the coffee would stay unnoticed forever. What he was hoping for was that it would stay encrypted long enough that Hart could do whatever he needed with the information before it got found out.
Hopefully that won't take too long, Wilson said to his coffee.
His coffee was mute on the subject. Wilson slurped some of it and then called up the data he had transferred from Vasily Ivanovich's data card into his brain pal. They were, indeed, entirely pedestrian reports on colony life, but Wilson had already found something important in there. He didn't want to miss anything else. He suspected he didn't have all that much time left to go through the data before he was ordered to delete all of it. Schmidt didn't know what strings Ambassador Obumwe had to pull to get her way, but she pulled them. Across the table from her and Schmidt were Anissa Rodebaugh, chief of the mission for the Bula negotiations, Colonel Liz Egan, the liaison between the Colonial Defense Forces and the Department of State, and Colonel Abel Rigney, whose exact position was not known to Hart, but whose presence here was nevertheless slightly unsettling. The three of them eyed Obumwe coolly. She returned the favor. No one was paying attention to Schmidt, and he was fine with that. "We're here," Egan said to Obumwe. "You have 5 minutes before you and Ambassador Rodebaugh have to get back to it. So tell us why you so urgently needed to see us all. You haven't been entirely forthcoming with me about this wildcat colony on Wanchi," Obumwe said. Schmidt noted the clipped tone that Obumwe's voice took on when she was especially irritated. He wondered if it was noticeable to anyone else at the table. "In what way?" Egan asked. "In that it's not a wildcat colony at all. It's an under-the-radar Colonial Defense Forces outpost," Obumwe said. This received about 10 seconds of silence, with Rodebaugh, Egan, and Rigney studiously not looking at each other. "I'm not entirely sure why you think that is," Egan said. "Are we going to waste the next 5 minutes with this sort of bullshit, Colonel?" Obumwe said. "Or are we actually going to talk about how this is going to affect our negotiations?"
"It's not going to affect the negotiations at all," Rodebaugh said.
Really?
Obomwe said, cutting her off. Schmidt noted the chagrin on Rodabau's face at this, but she and Obomwe were technically of the same diplomatic rank, so there was little she could do about it.
Because, Anissa, I have a Bula sub-ambassador I've been talking to for the last day, who I am almost entirely certain knows more about this so-called colony than I do. I think, as a result, I'm being led down a very short pier. I think when I get pushed off, the entire negotiation is going to go down with me. If I fail at a negotiation because of my own failures, I accept that. If I fail because I'm being screwed by my own side, that I will not accept.
Colonel Rigney, who had been silent to this point, turned to Schmidt.
Your friend Harry Wilson's on the Tübingen, he said to Schmidt. I just checked through my brain pal. He's the one who's feeding you information.
Schmidt opened his mouth, but Obomwe reached out to touch Schmidt on the shoulder. This, as much as anything else, shocked Schmidt into silence. He couldn't remember another time Obomwe had physically touched him before.
If Hart or Harry Wilson have done anything, it's been on my orders, she said.
You ordered him and Wilson to essentially spy on a Colonial Defense Forces mission, Rigney said.
I reminded them of their obligation to help me achieve our goals as diplomats, Obomwe said.
By spying on the Colonial Defense Forces mission, Rigney repeated.
I appreciate the attempt to run out the clock by distracting me into a side discussion, Colonel Rigney, but let's not, Obomwe said. I repeat, we have a military mission on a Bula world. I'm almost certain the Bula we are negotiating with are aware of it. What's your proof of that?
Rodabau asked.
Nothing hard, Obomwe said, but I know when people aren't negotiating in good faith. That's it, Rodabau asked. You have a feeling. You're dealing with an alien species, for Christ's sake. Their whole psychology is entirely different. And that doesn't matter at all, because in fact we have an illegal military outpost on this alien species planet, Obomwe said. If I am wrong, then we lose nothing. If I am right, however, then we risk the failure of the entire process.
What do you want from us, Ambassador? Egan asked Obomwe.
I want to know what's really going on, Obomwe said. It was bad enough that I went into negotiations having to deal with the possibility that the Bula would discover we snuck a military ship into their territory to remove an attacked wildcat colony, but at least I could spin that if I had to. There is no way to spin a CDF ship coming to the aid of a covert military installation.
It wasn't a covert military operation, Rigney said, leaning forward. This got Egan's attention.
Are you really going to do this, Abel? She asked, turning to Rigney.
She already knows more than she should, Liz, Rigney said. I don't think a little context is going to matter at this point.
He turned back to Obomwe.
It really is a wildcat colony, he said.
A wildcat colony with CDF soldiers in it, Obomwe said.
The skepticism in her voice was impossible to miss.
Yes, Rigney said. Since the Conclave has restricted us and other unaffiliated species from colonizing, we've been dropping a few CDF members into wildcat colonies. The rest of the colonists don't know. We modify their bodies to look and act like natural human bodies, but keep their brain pals in. They record data and send it along occasionally. We recruit CDF members with a background in technical work, so they usually end up being in control of their colony's communication systems.
To what end? Obomwe asked.
We want to see how the Conclave responds to wildcat colonies, Rigney said. Whether it sees them as a threat, whether they respond to them the same way as an official colony, and whether ultimately wildcat colonies, or colonies that give the appearance of being wildcat colonies, are a way we can keep expanding our presence without having conflict with the Conclave.
And you thought colonizing a planet already claimed by another species was a smart thing to do, Obomwe said.
Rigney spread his hands.
We don't pick the planets, he said. We just put our people into the colony undercover.
How many of your people were on Wanchi? Obomwe asked.
We typically put in a couple of people, Rigney said. Most wildcat colonies are small. We'll put in one for every 50 colonists or so.
He turned to Schmidt.
How many did your friend Wilson wash up?
Schmidt glanced over at Obomwe, who nodded.
too, sir, he said.
And that sounds about right, Rigney said. He settled back in his chair.
What do we do about this?
Abomwe asked.
And by we, you mean you, Rigney said.
Yes, Abomwe said. We don't do anything, Egan said. The Bula haven't brought it up to us.
We're not going to be the ones to bring it up to them, Rodabao said. If they do ask about the Wildcat colony, then we tell them that as soon as we found out about it, we moved to remove them, so quickly that we didn't ask permission first, so sorry. We'll be out of there before then. And if they find out about the CDF members among them?
Abomwe asked. Rigney pointed at Schmidt.
We have them, he said. We have them both. More specifically, we have their heads where their brain pals are.
Abomwe gawked at the three of them.
You're joking, right?
She said.
The Bula are not that stupid.
No one said they are stupid, Rigney said. But all our intelligence suggests that the Bula don't know the Wildcat colony was there, and they weren't the ones who attacked it. We're going to proceed with the negotiations as they are.
And if they ask me directly about it, contrary to all expectation, they might,
Abomwe said.
Then you don't know anything about it, Rodabao said.
To be clear, you're asking me to lie to the Bula,
Abomwe said to Rodabao.
Yes, Rodabao said. You understand I think this is a bad idea,
Abomwe said. Rodabao looked annoyed with Abomwe, but it was Egan who answered.
The directive for this is coming from over all of our heads, Ambassador, she said, and none of us have the luxury of arguing with it.
Right,
Abomwe said. She got up and walked out of the room without uttering another word. From their side of the table, Rodabao, Egan, and Rigney looked over at Schmidt.
Thanks for coming, he said,
tried to smile, and failed. Harry Wilson entered the bridge of the Turbigen. A surprised Captain Jack Augustine looked up, along with his executive officer and other bridge crew. He gave them a couple of seconds for their brain pals to register and label him for them. Then he said,
I think we're in trouble.
Wilson saw Captain Augustine have an internal debate whether to jump on him for his unconventional entrance and then make a choice in the space of half a second.
Explain, he said.
We have a couple of CDF corpses in the meat locker right now, Wilson said.
Yes,
Augustine said.
So what?
I think there should be another one in there, Wilson said.
Excuse me?
Augustine said. We have two dead CDF, Wilson said. I think there was another one on the colony. I've been going through Vasily Ivanovich's data. It's where I found the data stored in a BrainPal readable format. But some of the documents aren't originally Vasily's. Some of them are from Martina Ivanovich, who forwarded them to Vasily using a BrainPal to BrainPal protocol. And some of them are from a guy named Drew Telford, who also sent them BrainPal to BrainPal.
We have our people on the planet now identifying the dead, Augustine said. They'll find him.
They have found him, Wilson said.
I wouldn't be bothering you with this if I hadn't already checked.
If they found him, then what's the problem?
Asked Selena Wan, the Turbigen's executive officer.
They didn't find all of him, Wilson said. He's missing his head. I would imagine a lot of the colonists are missing limbs and body parts, Augustine said. They were attacked, and it's been a week since the attack, so scavengers have been at them.
Lots of them are missing body parts, Wilson agreed, and then sent Augustine and Juan an image through his brain pal.
None of the rest of them are missing a body part that's been cleanly separated from the rest of their body.
There was a moment while Augustine and Juan examined the picture.
No one's found the head, Augustine asked after a minute.
No, Wilson said.
I've been having them look intensively for a couple of hours. There are bodies missing heads, but the heads are usually found not too far away, or the separation is ragged. This guy's head isn't near the body. It isn't anywhere.
Some animal could have run off with it, Juan suggested.
It's possible, Wilson said. On the other hand, when the head of a CDF soldier has been cut cleanly from his body and his head is nowhere to be found, I'd suggest it's not prudent to assume some animal is making a snack of it.
You assume it's been taken by whoever attacked the colony, Augustine said.
Yes, Wilson said. And while I'm at it, I think that whoever told us that the Bula didn't know the colony was here guessed really badly wrong. I think not only did the Bula know it was here, I'd be guessing they're the ones who made the raid. If they didn't know it was here, I'm willing to bet whoever attacked it took that head to the Bula, because evidence of a CDF presence on one of their planets is worth more than a little bit of cash.
But they couldn't have known about the CDF presence here, Juan said.
We didn't. At this point, I don't think it matters if they did before, Wilson said. I think it matters that they do now, and if they do now,
then they know we're here now, Augustine said.
Right, Wilson said. In which case, it's not the colony that's the CU's biggest diplomatic problem at the moment. It's us.
Augustine was already ignoring Wilson to focus on contacting his ground forces to get them off the planet.
They'd only gotten about half of them up before six Bula warships skipped above Wanchi and trained their weapons already hot on the Turbigan.
Obomwe's negotiations with Sub-Ambassador Ting were winding down when Schmidt heard a pleasant ping from the Sub-Ambassador's PDA. Ting excused herself for a moment, picked up the device, appeared to read a note there, and performed the Bula equivalent of a smile.
Good news? Obomwe asked.
It might be, Ting said, and set the PDA down. She turned to her assistant, leaned over and spoke quietly into its closest ear. The assistant got up and walked out of the room.
I apologize, but there are things I will need to conclude our negotiations, and I don't have them with me at the moment, Ting said. I hope you don't mind waiting a moment while my assistant retrieves them.
Not at all, Obomwe said.
Thank you, Ting said. I think you and I have established a good rapport, Ambassador Obomwe. I wish every negotiating partner I've had could be as pleasant and easy to work with.
Thank you, Obomwe said. We have enough issues to deal with without adding unnecessary conflict to the negotiations.
I agree entirely, Ting said.
The door behind her opened, and her assistant returned, carrying a medium-sized case, which he set on the table.
And I believe that this common belief will aid both of us now.
What is that? Obomwe asked, motioning to the case.
Ambassador, you remember yesterday when we were talking about Ambassador Zala's appendix?
Ting said, ignoring Obomwe's question.
Yes, of course, Obomwe said.
I noted to you how it was strange such a small part of a system could threaten the entire health of the whole, Ting said.
Yes, Obomwe said, looking at the case.
Then you will understand when I say that what you tell me now, here in our little room, away from the larger negotiation between the Colonial Union and the Bula, will have an immediate impact on the health of the whole process, Ting said. I asked for the right to do this on the grounds that the specifics of our negotiation, the physical visitation of our people between our planets, lent itself to this particular task. All I had to do was wait until we had all the information we needed.
Obomwe smiled.
I'm afraid I'm not entirely following you, Sub-Ambassador Ting. I'm very sure that's not true, Ambassador Obomwe, Ting said. Please tell me what you know about the Colonial Defense Force's presence on Wanchi.
I beg your pardon, Obomwe said.
Please tell me what you know about the Colonial Defense Force's presence on Wanchi, Ting said.
Schmidt glanced over at his boss and wondered if the tension that he could see in her neck and in her posture would be at all noticeable to an alien not entirely familiar with human physiological cues.
I'm not a member of the Colonial Defense Forces, so I'm not sure I would be qualified to answer a question about its presence on any world, Obomwe said. But I know people in the CDF who would be better able to answer your question.
Ambassador, that was a delightfully artful evasion, Ting said.
I couldn't have done it better were I in your position, but I am afraid I really must insist that you give me a direct answer this time. Please tell me what you know about the Colonial Defense Force's presence on Wanchi.
I can't tell you anything about it,
Abomwe said, opening her hands in a I-would-help-you-if-I-could gesture.
Can't is a strategically ambiguous word to use here, Ting said. Can't because you don't know, or can't because you've been ordered not to say. Perhaps the fault here is mine, Ambassador. I have been too imprecise in what I've been asking. Let me try again. This is a question that you may answer with a yes or a no. Indeed, I must insist that it is answered with a yes or a no. Ambassador Abomwe, are you personally aware that there was a Colonial Defense Force's presence on Wanchi?
Sub-Ambassador Ting, Abomwe began.
Ambassador Abomwe,
Ting said, pleasantly but forcefully.
If I do not receive a yes or no answer to my question, I am afraid I will have to suspend our negotiations. If I suspend my negotiations, then my superiors will suspend theirs. The entire process will fail because you have not been able to offer a simple response to a direct question. I believe I am being perfectly clear about this. So, a final time. Are you personally aware that there was a Colonial Defense Force's presence on Wanchi?
No,
Abomwe said.
I am not aware of that.
Ting smiled a Bula smile and opened her hands in a very human-like gesture, as if saying, There, see?
That's all I needed, Ambassador, she said. A simple answer to a direct question. Thank you. I do apologize for adding this conflict to our negotiations, and especially sorry to do it to you. As I said, I believe we've had excellent rapport up to now.
Schmidt saw the tension drain out of Abumwe's neck and shoulders.
Thank you for your apology, but it's not necessary. I would just like to finish up our work.
Oh, we have,
Ting said, and stood. Abomwe and Schmidt hastily stood with her.
We finished the moment you lied to me.
When I lied to you, Abomwe said.
Yes, just now,
Ting said.
Bear in mind, Ambassador Abomwe, I am almost entirely certain that you were ordered to lie to me by your superiors. I have negotiated with enough humans to know what someone being ordered to lie looks like. Nevertheless, you did just lie to me, and that was the test, to see whether you would or not. You did.
Sub-Ambassador Ting, I assure you that whatever you believe I know, my actions should not have an effect on the larger negotiations, Abomwe said.
Ting held up her hand.
I promise you, Ambassador Abomwe, that your people and mine are not done negotiating, she said. What we are negotiating, however, has changed substantially.
She motioned toward the case.
And now at last we come to this.
What is in the case? Abomwe asked.
A gift,
Ting said.
Of sorts. It's more accurate to say we're returning something that used to belong to the Colonial Defense Forces. It's actually two objects, one inside the other. We considered removing the second from the first, but then we realized that you, humans, not you personally, could argue the first didn't come from the second. So we felt it best to leave it in place.
You're being vague, Abomwe said.
Yes,
Ting said.
Perhaps I don't want to ruin the surprise. You may open it if you like.
I think it might be better if I didn't, Abomwe said.
Your choice,
Ting said.
However, I would appreciate if you convey to your superiors a message I have from my superiors.
What is it?
Abomwe asked.
Tell them that after they've opened that case, when we reconvene, the subject of negotiations will be remuneration for the Colonial Union's illegal Colonial Defense Force presence in our territory,
Ting said.
Not only for the illegal settlement on Wanchi, but also the warship we've currently in our custody. The Turbingen, I believe it is called.
You've attacked the Turbingen?
Schmidt said, and immediately regretted the lapse.
No,
Ting said, turning to Schmidt, amused.
But we're not letting it go anywhere either. Its crew will be returned to you eventually. Our new round of negotiations, I believe, will set the price for the return of the ship itself.
She turned back to Abumwe.
You may tell your superiors that as well, Ambassador Abumwe.
Abumwe nodded. Ting smiled and gathered up her PDA.
And so farewell, Ambassador Abumwe, Mr. Schmidt. Perhaps your next set of negotiations will fare better for you.
She left the room, followed by her assistant. The case was left on the table. Abumwe and Schmidt looked at it. Neither made a move to open it.
This has been an Audible Frontiers production of The Human Division, Episode 3, We Only Need the Heads, written by John Scalzi, narrated by William Dufries, producer Mike Charzik, copyright 2012 by John Scalzi, production copyright 2012 by Audible, Inc.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.